Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hello and welcome to Islanders Anxiety, the podcast from Lighthouse Hockey. My name is Dan Saracini. Joining me today via Skype is my friend Michael Lieboff. And Mike, the Islanders are in first place, and I'm not really quite sure how to react to this. It's weird.
Yeah, it's really funny you actually say that. So I went to the game Sunday against the Ducks. I was with my brother, our buddies Frank and Matt, and some other friends.
We're going to talk a lot about that game in a little bit.
Yeah, and we're standing around this table in one of the guys' house we were at was Merrick, and I was just kind of looking around and being like, it's really weird that we're about to go watch this team that's in first place. And the whole driving conversation was how we didn't really know what to do with ourselves. Like, nobody knows how to react at all, the whole fan base. And as soon as we got into the Coliseum, I heard someone right in front of me say to the person they were at the game with, go, I don't know what is going on. And I just was like, exactly, in the best way possible. But like, nobody knows what to do. It's nobody knows how to react and do this. And I think it's a good thing because it means we're all taking it in stride and we're just enjoying every shift. It's great.
Yeah. I was telling you, I was listening to our previous podcast on my way home from work today, and it's funny because the Islanders were at the time 6 points out of first place, and we were talking about how they had kind of had a weird run. They had played pretty poorly in a third period against the Rangers, but came back and won. They played pretty poorly in a game after that against the Rangers again and had lost. And then they had played really well against the Tampa Bay Lightning and won, which, you know, was kind of a milestone game at that point. And we were just talking about, like, kind of holding their head above water and still keeping the good times rolling, and, you know, nothing really more or less than that, which is totally fine. And here we are, and we're going to talk about, like, their prospects of winning the division. I mean, they're up by 3 points right now. It's the All-Star break. The Capitals are playing right now. They have a 2-1 lead over the Maple Leafs. So, I mean, that lead could be down to 1 point by the end of the time we're done recording this. But the important thing is that the Islanders are in first place at the All-Star break, which is a thing, like, me, you, and everybody at the Coliseum that day never thought we would be at. This is not a point we ever thought we would get to in this season. You know, like, that's just crazy.
Yeah, it's so funny. It's so weird. It's really driving me like crazy in a good way. Like, I can't stop thinking about it. I can't stop talking about the team and just how good it feels. We talk a lot about the beginning of the season too, like the PDO and stuff. And sure, the Islanders are probably their shooting percentage is a little crazy, but like, it looks, if you watch every game, it looks like a sustainable way of playing hockey, especially because they keep improving. Like, they're not getting worse as the season goes on, which is kind of something I also didn't see. I thought, you know, if the Islanders did succeed and, you know, scrape into a playoff spot, it would be, you know, the way the kind of Canucks are doing it right now, which is kind of just, you know, punching above their weight. And the Islanders aren't doing that. They are one of the heavyweights right now, which is if you, no matter like what statistic you're looking at, they've kind of improved over the season. Obviously the play and goal has been insane. It's we're one of the big boys this season. The Islanders are going to be a team that is going to play a role in how this season, you know, unravels. And who knows? Like it could of course blow up in our face, but it could also go the distance, which is just really, really strange.
Right. So let's talk about, there's been five games since we last spoke, and I'm going to go just through them real quickly, and then we'll take them piece at a time after that. So the Islanders were coming off of a 5-1 win over the Tampa Bay Lightning a couple of Sundays ago. They followed that up with a 2-1 overtime win over St. Louis. They followed that up with a 4-1 win over the New Jersey Devils with an empty net goal. And then the next night, I think we're going to talk probably more about this game than any other, they had a game in Washington against the defending Stanley Cup champion Capitals. Barry Trotz has returned to Washington, D.C., and came out of that with a 2-0 win, which is just ridiculous. The game you were at was a 3-2 win, a 3-0 win over the Anaheim Ducks at the Coliseum. And then most recently, last night, they lost in a shootout to Chicago 3-2, which snapped their five-game winning streak. And when you talk about, you know, the way they've played and kind of how they've gotten to this point where they're, again, 3 points up in the division. But I forgot. I need to apologize. This week it's my turn to fight a cold. Last week was Mike's. So if my voice cracks and stuff, and if the episode is a little less edited than it normally is, that's why. But we're here because we got to get all this stuff off of our chest. When you talk about the way they play and the way they've gotten to this point, I think those three middle games, the 4-1 win over the Devils, the 2-0 win over the Caps, and the 3-0 win over the Ducks, represent the sort of perfect ideal of what Trotz hockey, what Islanders hockey is this season. They gave up less than 20 goals, less than 20 shots on goal in each of those. 19 for the 17 against the Devils, 19 against the Caps, and then 19 against the Ducks also. So they kept their opponents under 20 shots on goal, which is pretty crazy. They pounced on all of them early, and they never at any point deviated from the game plan. It wasn't like, you know, they kind of had a bad period here or bad showing. They were in complete control in all of those games, again, including, most importantly, a game in Washington against the Caps, who are slumping. The game against the Blues and the game against the Blackhawks are a little bit similar in that the Islanders kind of had bad second periods, which sort of were sandwiched in between better periods. They owned overtime in both of those situations, and against the Blues they won, and against the Blackhawks they couldn't score. And then this is not a team that should go to shootouts. I think we can we'll talk about some problems later on. Shootouts are one of them, although I guess, you know, it's not that big a problem. But yeah, those three games, this five-game winning streak has been fun, and those three games in the middle represent the perfect ideal of how this team has gotten to this point and what Barry Trotz wants to see from his team. They were suffocating, they were frustrating, and people might call them boring, but you know what? Winning is exciting, so I'll take it. You can play bore me to tears. As long as you win, that's okay. I'm fine with that.
Yeah, there's really nothing boring about doing what the Islanders are doing right now, which is just turning this entire league on its head. And honestly, like, could change the way the game is played. You know, this is a copycat league. And, you know, we're going to talk about the Oilers later, I'm sure. And, like, teams that are struggling this year to play the, you know, run-and-gun style, very skill-heavy, speed-heavy game could kind of look at the Islanders as the blueprint. But, you know, that's even besides the point. The crazy thing about those games, the Devils game and the Capitals game, a lot of times you'll watch it. If you watch boxing, you'll watch two fighters. Maybe one is more skilled than the other, and that plays a part. But one fighter just has the right game plan, and it just there's the other fighter is in a ring with them, trying to solve a puzzle. And solving a puzzle while you're getting punched in the face is very hard to do. And it's the same thing as playing hockey, right? You know, right. The Islanders are a puzzle that a lot of teams are really every night are having trouble solving, and trying to solve that puzzle on the fly is really tough. And that's kudos to Barry Trotz again, and, you know, Lamoriello to some extent, and just the team in general. Obviously the goaltending, it's it's really interesting to, if you watch the other team, like focus on the other team for one of these games, where the Devils game for sure in that second period was the second period that they shut them down. I've like, this Devils team could not figure out the Islanders. You could have given them 2 hours, I think, and they wouldn't have, you know, on the ice, and they wouldn't have scored in that second period. It was just wild to watch.
It was. And the Capitals game was a lot of the same thing. I was watching it, and I was like, you know whose name I haven't heard this entire game? Tom Wilson. Like, they just – the entire Capitals team couldn't get anything going. They just couldn't. And, you know, they had – we'll talk about – they're slumping right now, which is why, you know, they're them being up on the Leafs is kind of a big deal. They blew – what is it, like a 2 or 3 goal lead last night to lose to San Jose. So, you know, the Islanders may have caught them at the right time, but they just completely disarmed one of the most offensive teams in the league and were never not in control. Even though it was only 2-0, I never felt that game was out of hand.
I was going to ask you, when that third period happened, it was 0-0 going into the third. Every other year of my life – that game, I'm white knuckling. I'm like, you know, that especially, you know, just given the stakes, there was a lot. And Trotz even said, you know, there was a lot at stake in that game. He said it, I think, before the Chicago game, and just talking about, you know, not having a letdown going into the break or whatever. And just was thinking during that third period, it was so weird. It was a weird phenomenon, personal phenomenon, I guess, that I just was like, this is maybe the first time I've seen the Islanders go into a big game, into the third period tied, and just feeling, you know, pretty sure of the outcome of the game. You know, if the Islanders probably are going to win this game, and just with the way they were playing, unless something, you know, bad luck happens or a penalty. And it was such a strange feeling, because the rest of my existence as an Islander fan has been the opposite.
Yeah, no, Josh Bailey had a goal, and then Cal Clutterbuck and Matt Martin a couple of minutes later on a 2-on-0 pretty much put the game away. On the end, Alex Ovechkin is obviously one of the great players in NHL history. Even without the Stanley Cup last year, his resume was secured. But man, when you get beat by Matt Martin in a foot race, you got problems. Like, you might need to reevaluate or take a day off or something, because Matt Martin had a step on Alex Ovechkin and he just rocketed right past him, and the two of them, he and Clutterbuck, on a 2-on-0, and Clutterbuck kept it himself. But they just won. Like, I have not seen an Islanders team, and I'm sure you feel the same way, we have not seen Islanders teams win with defense. We've only ever seen them win with offense. You know, the Laviolette teams were good. They were good defensively. Adrian Acoin is a guy we've talked about a lot who was really good. Kenny Johnsson was obviously good back then. Back when Roman Hamrlik was good. Was he on that team?
Back. Yeah, he was. Yeah. Back before Kenny Johnsson was a fireman.
Yeah. No. So, I mean, it's not that they've had teams that were bad defensively, but they were okay. Like, they were totally adequate. These guys, their goal is to absolutely shut you down and suffocate you. And that is the blueprint by which Barry Trotz came up through the Nashville Predators. And even from the Predators' first games, they played this stifling, boring defensive style that won them a lot of games. And, you know, it took them a while to actually, you know, manifest those games into a playoff spot. But it's a way to work. I mean, there's a reason that the Devils did it. There's a reason that the Panthers did it for a long time. There's a reason that teams do it, because it works. And we're going to talk about Lou Lamoriello later, because Arthur Staple had a cool Q&A with Lou. But, you know, this gets back to something we talked about a long time ago, which is the Islanders thinking about going back to basics, thinking inside the box, winning by playing defense. Go figure. Who knew? Like, you know, you can do this. Well, maybe if you're not trying to win every game 6-4, you can pull this off. And like you said, the goalies are playing really, really well. Robin Lehner, first star of the week. He had a 3-0 record. He let in, what was it, one goal in three games or something like that. He was fine in Chicago. The game time.
I thought he was really, really good in the, I guess the second period. I'm trying to think of when and there. I thought he was good. I didn't think he was, you know, fantastic, but I thought he was gave the Islanders a chance to win that game.
Oh, for sure. But, and the game time goal, kind of like, it was credited to Jonathan Toews, but it almost looked like it kind of bounced off of him as he was kind of like sliding by the crease.
And the other goal was a 5-on-3.
Right,
so
yeah. So he was really good. And Thomas Greiss was phenomenal in the game in Washington. Like, you know, that was – they started him back-to-back, and you couldn't, you know, we'd rather have that. And you were like, all right, well, I hope Barry's making the right call here. But he did. And they were both phenomenal. And then Leonard came right back with the game you were at, that 3-0 game against the Ducks. And, you know, the funny thing about that game and then in the Devils game before it was, you know, people might be like, well, the Devils suck this year without, and Taylor Hall was hurt, so they stunk even more. The Ducks had won 2 games in a row, but they had lost 12 in a row before that, so they're also not a well-constructed team. They half the team is hurt. And so, well, I mean, you know, I hope the Islanders should beat those guys. And my whole thing, and again, it gets back to the teams that we're used to seeing, is like, you might say, well, they beat up on some lesser competition. I say that's called TCB, as Elvis used to say. That is taking care of business. That is beating a team that you're supposed to beat convincingly and quickly. And how many times?
That's how teams win Stanley Cups.
Pretty much. You know? And like, yeah. It occurred to me, I was thinking about it today, like, how many times have we seen the Islanders in a position where a team is coming in, you know, Western Conference team on like a, you know, 2-week road trip, it's like game 5 or 6 or something like that, or a team on a back-to-back, or a team that's got this long slump and they're just, nothing's working for them, and all the hockey gods are against them for a week and a half and they're falling out of the playoff race. And how many times have we seen them come into a game against the Islanders and dominate and leave, and the Islanders are like, well, you know, I thought we were prepared for them, but we didn't, you know, have it tonight. It's like, no, that's not how it's supposed to be. You're supposed to beat these guys. So to me, shutting out the Devils and the Ducks is the way you're supposed to act if you're trying to be, you know, a competent, you know, first place NHL team. That's how you're supposed to do it. And then to throw a 2-0 shutout over the Capitals in Washington, Barry Trotz's return, it's just the icing on the cake, basically.
Yeah, and it's, you can't say, I know people are like, well, you could say the Blackhawks are slump. I mean, not the Blackhawks, the Capitals are slumping right now. It's, you know, we're not seeing the best out of them. That was the Barry Trotz return game. Like, so there's, you can't tell me that these guys didn't have a little jump.
Oh, for sure.
And didn't want to win that game. I mean, the Islanders, of course, you know, wanted to win for him as well. And but that was not that kind of game where you're just catching a team coming off. In fact, the Islanders were on a, I think both of them were on a back-to-back. Yes. But the Islanders were, you know, obviously they got a back-to-back too. So, you know, this is not, that was not a game that you can say the Islanders should have, you know, won. That was the, I mean, the odds suggested the Islanders had like a less than a 40% chance of winning that game. So the fact that they did that, and they did it in a clinical way, is so encouraging. One of the most encouraging performances I've seen out of an Islander team, like in a single game in, you know, my lifetime, which I keep saying stuff like that, you know, and I especially tend to be hyperbolic about the Islanders, both good and bad. And, but it's hard not to be now. It's hard with this team. And I think I remember a lot of, you know, random regular season games. And that was one that I can't really hold, that other ones can't really hold a candle to, just given the stakes and how well they played. Those types of games I look forward to all day, and then the Islanders end up ruining it, you know, by losing and not showing up. And they did the exact opposite this time.
There's a lot of, they are traversing a lot of untrodden ground this season, or ground that has not been trodden, if that's even a word, in a very, very long time. And you and I were talking before we started recording that, and they have a really tough schedule post All-Star break. And we'll talk about that a little bit later, maybe even next week. We'll see. Maybe we'll keep this one positive and then talk about all that stuff next week. But they have 33 games left in the season. And let's just say, just for the sake of argument, that they go 20-13 in those games. You know, they're reasonably over 500, but, you know, they lost a lot of games here. They have a Western Conference road trip. The Flames are one of the best teams in the league, that whole thing. Let's say they go 20-13. That would give them 103 points for the season. And that would be the most they've had since, hold on, let me call this up. That would be the most they've had since 1984. When they had 104 points. The 14-15 team that broke 100 points for the first time since 1984 had 101. So, again, I don't want to put the cart before the horse here, but if they're in that, they're on a pace to reach a stratosphere that they have not reached in quite a long time. And you brought up something that, I mean, they haven't won a division since when?
I believe it's 1988, which is before I was born.
So, I mean, that's a long time. That is a long time to go without not winning it. Now, there's 35 games left or whatever it is. they're not – nobody's going to hand them the division. The Columbus Blue Jackets could easily win the division, which would probably be the first time they've ever done that. So, I mean, it's nothing is set in stone. But, like, this is the place that this team has found itself. And I think that they recognize that, and I hope that after the All-Star break, they pick up right where they left off and, you know, use the time well for to rest, but don't lose sight of the bigger picture, which I don't think they will.
Yeah, they actually talked about that after the Blackhawks game, is that, you know, they were disappointed to lose and whatever, but I think it was Anders Lee who said, you know, we're looking at the big picture after tonight. And I actually kept saying that to people at work. I've been, you know, drumming up the Islanders winning streak, and they're like, oh, it's a tough loss. And I was like, no, we're looking at the big picture. Which is, like you said, look at where they are. They're in first place. And I think I've never seen them win a division. And I think that's why I've never even like thought about it, to be that, right. That's, I was saying to my friend, Mike, right? Exactly. I was like, that has been such a foreign concept that it was basically been just make the playoffs, who cares? Like what does winning the division even mean? You know, make the playoffs, upset a couple teams, and you might find yourself in the Eastern Conference Finals. Something I've also never seen, that has always been the path to me to, it's never been, you know, win the division and actually, you know, what if they run away with the division? Like these are foreign concepts to me. And it struck me actually too, when I was looking up at the banners at the Ducks game and being like, it would be crazy to see another banner go up there, division banner. And I'm just like in awe of that fact that it's really starting to sink in that this team could put together a division winning season. And that would be a first for so many Islander fans, and I just don't. I mean, I wonder if other fans have felt the same way, that it's just never been in their thought process of going into a season. It's never been a goal of mine. It's never been like, oh, let's win the division. That's just not gonna ever happen.
Yeah, no, because I mean, there's
now it might.
Well, I mean, whenever anybody does like a preview of the Islanders, and when I say anybody, I mean us too. Usually it's like, yeah, they might be a bubble team, especially lately. It's been, well, they might be a bubble team, or I mean, you know, our predictions were all, no, they're not going to make the playoffs at all. I was like, they could, but weird shit would have to happen, basically. And Mike B was the only one who was like, hell yeah, they can make the playoffs. So I'm pulling for Mike, and I'm as much as I'm pulling for the Islanders. But it's never been on the table, and a lot of that has come from Barry Trotz. And so culture change was the theme going into the season. And there was an article, an interview with Lou Lamoriello. I don't believe we talked about this last week. I believe it was with Brett Sergalis, and he talked with him in the post. And the last line was, oh, no, sorry, excuse me. It was Mike Vaccaro. Apologies to St. John's, fellow St. John's alumni, Mike Vaccaro, who spoke with Lou Lamoriello. And the last line was Lou actually throwing water on his own concept and being like, culture is an overused word. It really just means paying attention to the details and getting the details right. And that's pretty much what they're doing. And that's when you've seen them be successful, is when they follow through with the details in the games. That's where you see that when they don't follow through with the details, that's when you see a team have more shots on goal or kind of run through the period. But when they're on those details and they're playing in lockstep with each other, and they know where each other is going to be, and everything is crisp, and everybody's working and pulling the same direction on the rope, that is how it works. And I think, you know, to get back to what you were saying, like, I just don't think that there have been enough sort of detail-oriented people in running this team throughout those years that could actually look forward to winning a division. Because in order to win the division, your details have to be down on point. They have to be. And they just, the people who were in charge just didn't see it that way. And they just weren't detail oriented. And I don't, you know, they never thought about winning division because they didn't think that they had all the details right. I mean, I don't know if I'm even saying it, getting it out right, but
I think what you're saying makes so much sense too, because maybe it's just me who thinks it, but we talked about before the season, I think we brought up Lou saying something like that, like, you know, that was like one of the first things he wanted to get people to do. And I remember hearing like the word accountability, and we always said, we talked about that word a lot. It was always a buzzword around the Islanders because there was obviously a lack of accountability. And I would always kind of be, I don't know if it was just me being naive or just being, you know, I don't care about it. I just want wins and I can't, you know, tangibly feel it. You know, someone being accountable in the Islanders organization, but it's definitely coming through. It's shining through. Like this team, obviously there was something there that the people who were in charge didn't get enough out of. And you think, oh, this is a professional sports team, which means that the people who are in these positions are well paid, earned their way, and are supposed to be the best in the world at, you know, doing these type of things. And they weren't. They were clearly not. And the new regime is elite at it. They're just like getting the best out of everybody. And if it's Lou Lamoriello saying it's the details, then it's the details. If it's him saying that it's because they're eating, you know, they're eating right, it's because they're eating right. The I will believe them. Yeah, it's the haircuts, the haircuts whatever it is.
Numbers,
yeah. The numbers. I know people are talking about how it's like, you know, that's you know, laconic or whatever. Like it's worked. Whatever, everything they've done has worked. And you can say that, you know, there were some bad deals and some, you know, probably questionable personnel moves. Look where they are. So who cares? Who, like, you know, it's worked to this point in a big picture sense. Those have paid off. And you know, who's to say that if they didn't do a couple of those things, they wouldn't be here. So, it's, I think that's kind of what we're getting at, is that this new regime has just taught these guys how to be professional. And once again, that's a cliche, but it's paying off.
Yeah, no, for sure. And obviously the guy in charge of those details and the professionalism has been Barry Trotz. And something else happened at that game that I know I have never seen. And I actually laughed about it and told my wife this when I was watching the game, was after, you know, towards the end of the third period, the crowd, the sellout crowd at Nassau Coliseum, started chanting the name Barry Trotz. And it didn't come with the word fire in front of it or must go at the end of it. They were chanting this guy's name in recognition of all of the things he's done throughout the first 50 games of the season. And Trotz heard, and he joked afterwards that he turned to Scott Gomez and was like, why do I suck? And I guess Gomez was like, no, they're not saying Barry sucks. They're saying Barry Trotz. And he's like, oh, like that. So I have never heard an Islanders crowd chant a coach's name in affirmation before. I've been through Mike Must Go. We've been through Fire Cappy. We've been through Snow Must Go. Snow Must Go had its own billboard. Like, that's kind of a big deal. I've never heard of an Islanders coach getting his name chanted that way. And yeah, he's earned it.
Maybe we should be putting a billboard up for Trotz, you know?
Right.
Hey, thank you, Barry. Yeah. We could put it in Garden City or something. Like, thank you so much.
We put it up at Home Depot because he said, my other favorite quote from last week was, he was like, you know, he takes obviously all the credit, because he's the biggest fish out there, but also because Lamoriello, another one of his rules, is he doesn't allow assistant coaches to be interviewed. So Trotz was saying after the game, you know, it's really the whole staff. I'm the beautiful face you have to look at every day and talk to. You can see the passion on the island. You go to Home Depot and you're getting high fives. It's not a bad place to play. So if you're seeing Barry Trotz at Home Depot and you're giving him a high five, that's awesome. Kudos to you and kudos to Barry Trotz. But I was stunned. I literally said to my wife, I've never heard this before. They're chanting Barry Trotz, and that's crazy. That's just crazy. And I had to explain the whole Fire Cappy.
You were the one who said that Islander fans, and I think it's perfect, were like wounded dogs, you know? Mm-hmm. And we want is somebody who gets it.
Yeah.
We want you to understand what makes this team and rooting for this team so special. This is a team and a community more than it is a product of a city, right? We're not in Nashville or Dallas or something. That's a big city where there are millions of people. This is a suburb, and we, for some reason, root for this team, and you don't really get it unless you're in the circle. And Barry Trotz is in the circle, and he gets it.
Yeah.
And sure, the winning helps for sure. Like, that definitely brings these feelings to a forefront and makes us want to even show up more and show this appreciation more. But he gets it. And I was saying the other day that he is saying and doing and understanding the way we wanted John Tavares to for the entire time he was here. He's saying things that I was like, if some of the players that were here before that said anything like that, it would mean the world to us, even if they sucked. Even if they suck. Like, that's why Matt Martin has such an endeared to this fan base. He's not that good, but he gets it.
Right.
Barry Trotz completely understands what this whole thing is and why it this fan base reacted the way it did when we almost lost it and when we lost the Coliseum and all this and when it came back to the Coliseum, why the fervor was back. And that is a huge part of what makes him and this team and what they're doing so special, because there's some real moral fiber to what they're doing. And I don't know.
Yeah, just, no, Trotz, he said this week, we're all Islanders. That's yeah, what he said that when they were going to Washington. He's like, I'm an Islander now. Well, my memories with Washington were great. I love those guys. We had four great years. But I'm an Islander now. We're all Islanders. And you could almost hear the collective gasp of Islanders fans everywhere, like, did he just say what I think he just said? Like, we're all Islanders. Like, that's – I mean, all right, that was the marketing slogan for a while, but that's crazy that he said
that. But, yeah, it's kind of what it is. Like, the team is named after what we are, right, which is so rare, too. And it's another part of why it makes it special. And just, when he said, like, the – if – and this, it might not be fair, but if Bruce Boudreau said, we're all – we're part of the Wild or some – or, freaking
we're all ducks here.
and you'd be like, okay, that sounds cheesy or whatever. Or if Peter Laviolette said whatever the hashtag for the Predators is, and we're living that out, you'd be like, whatever. But like, just that is just so it felt so genuine, right, and not contrived. And that's what it really hit home. Like, it wasn't Barry Trotz saying, we're playing the game the right way. He said, we're all Islanders, right, and just the look on his face when he said it, it just hit home for so many people. And I think that was, like, honestly a huge, huge moment for us as a fan base.
Yeah.
And it'll get overlooked by a lot of people outside of it, but to us, we're like, he's right, we are. And that's part of what's this whole good feeling, good air of good feelings around this team is about. Like, that's kind of what it all boils down to, is what he just said and how he said it.
Yeah. No, well, that's a good segue. So, I want to – we'll freeze on that Caps game. So they beat the Caps, and they take over first place. And for a hot minute, this is a huge story. I mean, it's – people are on social media talking about it. Elliot Friedman was like, ladies and gentlemen, you're first place New York Islanders. Like, it's a big deal. And people all of a sudden finally are like, wow, these guys are playing that well that they're in first place right now. And with that came out – some people that might not have been too impressed with the fact that the Islanders, picked to finish dead last by a lot of people, were in first place. But also, a lot of people were kind of dredging up old takes about how the Islanders were supposed to be bad and kind of, regurgitating them or retweeting them and stuff like that. In full disclosure, again, we had a preview, a roundtable preview, and Mike B was the only one of us who picked the Islanders to make the playoffs. I said that them making the playoffs fell into the weird shit category, so I don't know, you can give me a pass if you want to, but I don't need it. It's fine.
I had no expectations.
Pretty much.
Like, no, yeah. I was ready for a season of, just weirdness and not in a good way.
This kind of went on for a little while, and my whole thing is I'm not gonna tell anybody to, like, not dunk on somebody on Twitter who had maybe a bad take from a few months ago. If that tickles you, if you enjoy it, it's fun. Go ahead. I mean, it's fine. But my whole thing is that I mean, there's really no other way to put this, but like, and we've talked about this now like 2 or 3 weeks in a row, but outside of us, nobody really is paying attention. Like you just said, like, this is an important thing for Islanders fans, because we have not felt these emotions in a very, very, very long time. And nobody is going to really feel the same way unless you've been in it. And let's be honest, most people don't really pay any attention to the Islanders anyway, so why would they feel that way? And so, like, people like Ryan Lambert or James Myrtle, who we talked about last week, or like, writers from Deadspin or whoever, any of these, like, sort of, Twitter hockey intellectuals that like to throw wet blankets on things when people are having too much fun. Like, you could dunk on them all you want, but at the end of the day, they don't really care. Like, we talked about, like, when I say care, I don't mean that they're rooting for the Islanders, because they surely are definitely not. I can promise you that. They're definitely not rooting for the team. They're definitely not rooting for your happiness and your satisfaction.
They'll definitely tweet that, oh, this is a great story when the Islanders, win a playoff game or something.
Right. But
no, they're definitely not rooting for it.
No, they definitely don't. They definitely don't care. And that's fine. They don't have to root for you, but they just don't care. and they haven't been following this team. They're not like guys like Arthur Staple or Andrew Gross that are like with the team and know the players and know the frustration and have that kind of finger on the pulse of the fan base. They just don't care all that much. And I guess that's the thing. Like if you know, and we all did it. I did it too. Like, you know, you, they're in first place and you kind of go searching for validation or searching for praise or anything like that. You're not going to find it from these people. You're just not. You never are. Like, I've enjoyed a lot of what Ryan Lambert's written over the years, but his shtick is a pretty obvious one. Like, he writes that an obviously great player is better than you even think he is, and that everything else sucks. Like, that's, and he's never wrong, because he can, those two takes are never, ever wrong. You know, if something sucks, it sucks. And then if it turns out it doesn't suck, well, he's like, well, it sucked at the time. And you just continue to say it sucks. That's his thing. He doesn't care. He doesn't care that the Islanders are in first place. So if I were, my advice, again, you don't have to take it. You can continue to dunk on people. It's fine. But my advice would be to use that mental energy that you would normally use to dunk on a James Myrtle or somebody like that, and use that mental energy to remember where you were on a Sunday afternoon when the Islanders shut out the Anaheim Ducks 3-0 and a sold-out Nassau Coliseum chanted Barry Trotz's name. Like, that to me would be a more productive and satisfying use of that brain power than finding an old tweet from Deadspin and, like, retweeting it to be like, ah, these guys are wrong. Because, frankly, we were all wrong. Like, we were all wrong. Nobody expected them to be this way. So enjoy it. Like, have fun with it. Enjoy, you know, they're in first place at the All-Star break. I'm just going to soak it in. Like, I just want to sit back and, like, I want to frame the standings and just put them up just so I can look at them, and it will always be frozen in that moment. So there you go. I'm off my soapbox
it's a great point. And I've like actually physically almost done just that. I think I'm really enjoying Kevin Schultz's shtick with Ryan Lambert from afar. The tweet that he picked up was, so he just was, you know, surface level. He didn't, you know, go into it and whatever. But and I think Kevin is, you know, pretty funny with what he's doing. But I think it's true. Like, these, and we saw it especially after the Leafs game. That's when people really started to notice the Islanders and what was going on. And then when they caught the Leafs in the standings as well, You see a lot of people doing it. And I think we should just take them. Like, yeah, let's go right ahead. Do tweet that the Islanders are tied with the Leafs now. I that's what I'm enjoying maybe the most of this whole thing, is just like watching the Islanders creep up on these teams who are, you know, supposedly Stanley Cup contenders, and there's a team that is listed next to them in the standings that nobody really has figured out yet. The Islanders, I would say that the Islanders are the only team in the NHL that are playing this brand of hockey well. I think the Ducks were kind of there. I mean, the Wild play, but the Wild are not where the Islanders are. No. Like, but the Wild play a very, you know, structured defensive game and limit scoring chances and try to just generate good ones themselves. But no one's doing what the Islanders are doing well, and I think that's driving people nuts, because if you don't play the high event hockey that everybody wants to see, you know, from a neutral, because of, you know, they're watching the Dallas Stars or whoever on Game Center. Then you're an affront to hockey, which, you know, and they can't figure you out because they just can't quantify what makes you guys good. And I keep saying it. I think the Islanders' best quality is that they're hard to beat, and they're hard to, and that makes them hard to figure out. And that's what's driving these people mad. And they want to be able to kind of pick it apart and be right and say, you know, if the Islanders do, you know, God forbid, come undone, you know, Ryan Lambert can say, well, I did, or Sean McIntyre, whoever the fuck wants to say, can just say, you know, I did say that their goaltending was, you know, overperforming where they've been as career average. These aren't like established goalies, or their shooting percentage was going to come down. Like, all right, brother, like, we get it. But it's just like, that's what they're doing. And it's not what we should be focusing on. Like you said, like, this, what we should be focused on and galvanizing together as a fan base about is just where this team is. Yeah. And it is in a complete unknown quantity, right, for all of us. Like, you're a little older than me. You've seen, you know, at least a couple of seasons where the Islanders, you know, in like the early 90s season, and then in late 80s where they're all right. Like, they had some modest success. There is a huge portion of this fan base where that is, well, basically everybody, there's fans like me who have never seen it, And then fans like you who haven't seen it since, you know, they were wearing light up sneakers that lit up.
You know? Yeah, like, no, it's
that,
true.
That's what we're all dealing with together. Yeah. And that is there's a lot to unpack there. And we should really just be doing it in the best way possible. And it's going to be fun. It's fun to point out like people that underestimated the Islanders and to watch people do it. Mm-hmm. But I, like you said, like I would just focus on the best part of it, which is where the Islanders are in the standings right now.
The thing about those teams that you were talking about from the late 80s, early 90s, that, you know, they were okay. They, you know, was, I guess, well, the Terry Simpson era of, you know, 87 Easter Epic, and then the second Arbor era, like they were okay. But the number one thing that I always remembered about that time, and that's when I was kind of coming around to watch the Islanders, was that they were still, there was a lot of pride still in them. Like they had, people remembered, that wasn't too long after the Dynasty era. So people remembered and people had gotten into it, and like they were a topic of conversation no matter what. You weren't there, you know, now, and I've probably mentioned this before on this show, but like now everywhere I've worked, I've been the hockey guy or one of like maybe one or two other hockey guys. Back then, everybody was the hockey guy. Like everybody talked about hockey. You go and, you know, your friend's mom knew about what was going on with the Islanders, or, you know, your boss knew that they were in a slump, or somebody, you know, they were on the back Newsday all the time. It wasn't like, whoa, they beat the Rangers, now they're on the back page of Newsday. They were on the back page of Newsday all the time because that was the story, and they were part of the community. Like you said, they were part of the community. We're all Islanders. Like that was the whole thing. And so, you know, maybe it could get to the point that that's obviously the ideal would be to get to that point where they are still a topic of conversation for everybody. And it's not just like, you know, I don't know if, not to get off on a whole thing, but I don't know if our society is still the way it used to be back then, where, you know, we could all sort of come together over this one topic, but it'd be nice if we could, you know, and you could talk about it and stuff. And hell, even if your neighbors are Rangers fans, they'll still know what's going on with the Islanders because that's the way it was. A couple of things real quick to close up the point. So, yeah, there was a nice article in The Athletic by Evan Sporer on how the Islanders are doing what they're doing and defensively, specifically under Barry Trotz. And basically, I mean, I'm not going to give it away. I don't remember it. It's not in front of me. But it does talk about basically the details that we talked about, the details and the structure that Trotz has them playing and how they can manage the puck and control the game through defense, through stacking up the blue line, through funneling, you know, the puck and different players in different places, basically right into other Islanders and then turning about the other way. It was really well done, has like gifts and stuff like that. So you should definitely check that out. Also, Gotham Sports Network had a great article on basically what, again, you were just talking about, like the misconceptions about why this team is playing so well. And, you know, one of Lambert's thing was, well, you know, if you take out the first month, then you're kind of skipping over the games in which they were bad. And the point, and people like Kevin and other people are saying, like, you know, that's the point. Like they were working under a new coach with, you know, trying to find their footing, trying to find out who was doing what and what their roles were. And it's, I don't think it's out of the question to be like, well, that first 20 odd games or so, they were trying to figure it out. And after that point, they got pretty good. And so there's a big discrepancy between the Islanders at that point and the Islanders from that point on. And it's funny, you could tell the people that are paying attention by the people that talk about sort of like, well, they're, you know, whatever Corsi four or shots, whatever four is 47, you know, something. And it's like, well, that's because it includes those games where they really weren't still trying to figure stuff out. If you look at it more recently, you find a team that is closer to league average or maybe in a lot of cases better than average. And then on that point, right now, the Islanders are leading the league in goals against average by 6 goals. I mean, 2 shutouts will do that, but they've only given up 122 goals this year so far. The Bruins have given up 128. And that's a team I was going to say that I think plays a lot like the Islanders do, heavy on defense.
Yeah, you're right.
And then, like, you know, it ends up on Bergeron's stick, and before you know it, he and Marchand are in on a 2-on-1 or something like that.
I think that's the right the comp, closest, especially.
Yeah,
yeah, and a team that you should strive to be like.
Sure, absolutely. And Matthew Barzal can strive to be like the great Patrice Bergeron. That'd be pretty awesome.
he actually, just as a random tangent, he did something yesterday that I was just like, that, and it was, and maybe it's because Datsyuk's name kind of came up in the media a little bit, but I was like, that shift, he ended up taking a backhand shot that Cam Ward made a good save on, and right. I was like, that looked like Pavel Datsyuk. Mm. Just he had space at all times because nobody wanted to try to steal the puck from him. Because like, all right, he's going to burn me, and then he's in alone on the goalie. Right. And I was like, that is a Tabu Datsyuk shift. Anyway, yeah. Sorry.
No, no, he's – I mean, again, that's – when you have a 21-year-old player and you're comparing him to guys like Bergeron and Datsyuk, and it's not crazy, that's pretty wild. Like that's the kind of, you know, that's the kind of player he is. We'll talk about him in a little bit because he's got the All-Star game coming up this weekend. But yeah, so 122 goals against for the Islanders. Boston is second with 128. Just as I'm looking at this, Winnipeg, Nashville, Toronto, and Tampa Bay teams, obviously, that all have Stanley Cup aspirations are all below them. The Jets and Predators have 134. The Leafs have 137, although that doesn't count whatever's going on in the Caps game. And the Lightning have given up 140 goals. As far as goal differential goes, right now the Islanders are fifth. Tampa leads the way with a plus 59. That's a lot. Calgary's been one of the best teams in the league. You talk about a team that doesn't get talked about. We have not talked about the Calgary Flames at all, and they are just tearing things up out there. They have a plus 45 goal differential. Winnipeg is plus 33. Toronto is plus 31. And the Islanders are plus 25, along with Nashville. So, I mean, again, like you were saying, you know, if you look at this, you're like, yeah, Tampa Bay, Winnipeg, Pittsburgh, Nashville, San Jose. And meanwhile, right in the middle is this very odd old logo that has got a stick and a New York in it. And it's like, how did those guys get there? But that's the way it's been. And that's the way it's going.
It's, I was saying last week that just it's so interesting to look at them with that the numbers next to them, their current, you know, record and the goal differential, seeing the green of the NHL.com standings where when you're a positive goal differential team is so strange. It's seriously unbelievable. I think just in kind of the same vein, like these people that are starting to pay attention to the Islanders are kind of starting at the top with Lamoriello and Trotz, and they're not really getting into the nitty-gritty that we have. And I think like Nick Leddy made a great play yesterday. I think, you know, besides Leddy, I would say the way that this team has played is kind of, if you think about it, you're like, no, it actually makes sense that these numbers are next to the Islanders in the standings, because you go down the roster and you're like, these players all have played like they are on a team that should be, you know, whatever they are, 29, so whatever they are. It's first in the Metro. You know, they've all put in those kind of performances, which like goes, you know, to Trotz and them, and but also to the players who I think, you know, especially Leonard, like I people are starting to repay attention to Robin Leonard because of the streak he went on. But how that guy, and I know John Gibson is like a unbelievable goaltender, but how he's not start, people aren't starting to say like, yeah, he might be the goaltender of the year, he might be the Vezina winner, is a little frustrating to me. And I'm someone who, even when with Barzal on the call, they're like, I really don't, it's hypocritical of me because I don't really like to get into arguments about, you know, individual player awards or Hall of Fame voting or whatever. But like, to me, like this guy, it all things considered should be in this conversation for not just being a nice story anymore. Like, yeah, it's a beautiful story, but he's playing really, really well.
The Vezina is one of those awards like the Norris and the Selke that you have to get a reputation. Unfortunately, like once you're in the club, you're in the club. And so, like, I'm not saying that Patrice Bergeron hasn't earned his, whatever, 18 Selkies in a row or something like that, whatever it is. But, like, once you break into the club, you're there. And, you know, you're going to get kind of votes every year. Jonathan Toews is like that. He won, I think, one year, and then he's got, you know, Selke votes every year. And it's like, maybe he didn't really deserve it. But, well, he's just good. He won that one year, so he's good. The same with the Vezina. Like, it turns out to kind of always be the same people, but maybe this year is different. Maybe this year newcomers like Gibson and Leonard, and I guess Vasilevsky would be another possibility. I don't know. Whoever else might be up there, you know, could get a sniff, because it sounds like maybe Connor Hellebuck, although they've given up a lot of goals. No, they haven't given up too many goals. But, you know, maybe this is the year that some new blood gets into the club so that they can kind of keep getting that those bumps. You know, it took a long time for Marty Brodeur to get in that club too, and then once he did, he never left until he retired. So that's kind of his. But yeah, I would be surprised if people talk about that a lot more. You know, Robin Leonard is just, I think people keep waiting for him to kind of fall apart, but it's like, for years we heard that this guy was pretty good playing on bad teams. Well, now he's pretty good playing on a team that's playing stifling defense. And, you know, when you're only seeing 19 shots a game, you can, and he's getting shutouts. That's, again, that's what you want to see. That's taking care of business. That's what you're supposed to be doing. And good on him. And he's, I hope, you know, I think for us, forget the Vezina. We just want the Islanders to re-sign this guy, and which could be a few months away from now. But I think that's what we're all wondering about and how this affects them going forward. But Thomas Greiss hasn't been a slouch either. And you know, we don't talk enough about Piero Greco and Mitch Korn again because we can't because they never get interviewed. But, I mean, what those guys have done in conjunction with the rest of the team is just phenomenal. I mean,
I saw Lamoriello. I guess we should talk about that article. But yes. He mentioned Chris Terreri too.
Right.
Who
totally forgot about.
I didn't know he was with the team in a consulting role or whatever. I guess he's working with the minor league goalies.
Yeah.
And I remember his. I think I was at Chris Terreri's Islander debut. Yeah. And I was like, hey, look, we got. That was fun when the Islanders had him and then they had Van Beesbrouck right in that same weird, era.
Yeah, and then they traded Van Beesbrouck. Well, they traded Van Beesbrouck to Jersey for Terreri. Because they were going to the finals that year and they wanted to like help the Beezer out. Yeah, that was a weird symbiotic relationship where the Devils would just like dump their guys that they wanted to get rid of off on the Islanders, and the Islanders might send like a good player to Jersey or something like that. That John Van Beesbrouck was an Islander thing is still weird to me. I was there. I was an intern that entire season, so I watched him play almost every game that year. And boy, that was such a weird feeling of all people, you know. I mean, I think most people think of him as a Florida Panther, but I mean, for those of us, remember him as a Ranger.
I think you think of him as the Florida Panther because he had a great mask with them. Yeah, his whole mask was like the Panther face. Yeah, one of the first hockey masks, goalie masks that I remember. Being like, that's really cool.
Yeah, so.
Yeah.
My favorite always Andy Moog's bear, man. He had like a yellow bear.
Moog had a good one. And I loved Roman Turek. Like
Iron Maiden one. Yeah.
Yeah.
He was, I always loved the story of that because he's a huge Iron Maiden fan. Like he had a son named Eddie because he loves Iron Maiden. And his mask always was the Iron Maiden mask. So I don't know why I remember that about Roman Turek. I have no idea.
Where I was going, like this is like the Islanders haven't had a stable goaltending situation.
Right.
It's just 1 year in goaltending, obviously, is so fickle, but like I feel confident about both these guys where they're at in their games and the fact that they have Sorokin in the pipeline. It's another, like we just named John Van Beesbrouck and you think about like, you know, just the goaltenders they've recycled, and we want this guy, we want Leonard to be, you know, the guy. I think we're all rooting for him for a lot of reasons, and you know, top of the list is that he's really good. It's like, think about the goaltenders we've gone through since 2000, since that John Van Beesbrouck. Mm-hmm. I mean, you're talking, we had Jan Denis, we had Dwayne Rolison. There's all these names that you're like the stopgaps. Even Nabokov, who I love, one of my favorite Islanders ever, he's a stopgap.
Marty Biron. He signed with the Islanders because nobody else signed him. Like, he was like, oh, I guess I'm an Islander now. It's like, what? Why? Why are you here? I think, and everybody was like, why are you here, man?
Yeah, I think that was like three Goldie months. I think there was somebody. There was Rolison, Biron, and I don't know, someone else.
DiPietro, I guess. Yeah,
DiPietro, yeah. Right? Exactly. Yeah. How can I forget?
Well, that was the thing. He was around for so long. But you brought up the Q&A with Lamoriello, and you know, he talked about, of course, it always gets back to Marty Brodeur with Lamoriello, and he said, you know, Marty was the guy who sort of subverted or subjugated his individual identity for the identity of the team, I guess, until he ended up with St. Louis Blue for a little while there. Again, a completely bonkers thing that I'm sure Blues fans are going to look back on like we are right now and be like, man, remember when Marty Brodeur was a Blue? He talked about, you know, nobody personifies the jersey, you know, the logo on the front versus name on the back more than Marty Brodeur. But the big thing about that Lamoriello interview, and you should definitely read it, obviously, we always, you know, we always talk up art stuff in The Athletic. It's routinely excellent. My favorite thing about that article, and this will lead us into our discussion about the great Edmonton Oilers, who have made headlines once again. But my favorite thing about that Lamoriello article was he talked about the importance of being able to tell people something they don't want to hear. And it's not just a hockey thing. It's a life thing. He talked about sometimes, you know, people tell your kids something they don't want to hear, and it turns out to be a better lesson for them than anything you could have taught them, because you may not have wanted to tell them that. But that's such an important thing. And I think that's what gets to, you know, yeah, okay, Lou is old and he's got dumb rules about haircuts and numbers, but he's willing to tell people stuff they don't want to hear. And I guarantee that John Ledecky and Scott Malkin didn't want to hear that they should fire Garth Snow and Doug Waite, you know, and probably pay them money to sit at home and not do anything. But that's what needed to be done. And if they didn't do that, the Islanders surely would not be sitting here where they are right now. And I thought that was really, really interesting. And it's a simple thing, again, like, you know, sweat the details. It's a simple thing, but it means all the difference in the world. It's just, you know, being willing to tell somebody something they don't want to hear because it's for the betterment of the franchise or their life or whatever is such a huge thing. And it took a long time for the Islanders to get to a point where they got those people, and now they have them. And hopefully they continue on the right path because, again, that's a great thing to have as long as it's all working. But I thought that was really, really interesting. I mean, Lou is a master of telling you lots and lots of stuff and talking your ear off without actually saying anything. And so the Q&A was a little bit of that too, but I thought the whole thing was really fascinating. You know, it's not a long read, but it's really cool.
Yeah. I thought so too. I actually wanted more and more because I, you know, we're so used to not hearing from, right. It's so weird to see Lou Lamoriello's name. Like, oh, next on the NHL network will be right. Lou Lamoriello. Like, he's an Islanders general manager. They don't talk to the media.
Well, and he like jokes with them, and like, yeah. You know, it's just weird.
Yeah, they have relationships. Yeah. Like, these guys have known each other for a long time. It's not like Snow.
So, and it's always great talking to you, John. Like they Steve, Matthew Barnaby knows me very well. It's always lovely talking to you, man.
I was pulling up the article and just because there was like a part of it I'm trying to remember where it was like he was talking about moving to the island or whatever, and how he's like. He knew of it just from like driving to games when he was with the Devils or whatever. But he's the same thing. Like he's starting to I think understand what the ethos that surrounds this team, the ideal ethos. So it hasn't been that way obviously, but the reason that this team exists. And I think he's starting to get it. And to have him, who honestly this might be a little bit short sighted of me just because of how well they're doing right now. But I think Lou deserves a lot more credit than he's gotten, especially from the bigger. Plume of media who you definitely poo-pooed some questionable decisions he made in the offseason. But like this guy, if Barry Trotz isn't here without Lou Lamoriello, like there's a lot of things that there's probably no way that they're re-signing, Lee and Robin Leonard's not here without Lou Lamoriello was the one who went out and got Robin Leonard. Like he deserves a lot more credit than I think he's been given by a lot of people. And, at this point, I'm like just all in on what he's doing too. Like, it's, especially for this season.
Yeah.
It's like, how can you, if you're going to bring up like the Komarov contract or the fact that he brought Valtteri Filppula into this team and the Hossang stuff, like, you got to realize the bigger picture here is what matters. And what he's meant to the big picture is a lot more than what he's meant to like those or what those decisions mean to the big picture,
well,
I guess.
Well, and also he's filled out the front office staff with like business people and again, assistant coaches and people like that, that would not have happened without him. You know, I mean, that's all part of the same thing. I mean, he was brought in to be the team president and all that entails. And, you know, we've never seen anybody like that. And he said another thing he said in that article with Staple was, you know, the front office staff now is built much like it was when he was in New Jersey. So it's a very comfortable setup for him. And obviously he's talking to, he has people he knows, including his son, obviously. But yeah, I mean, this team needed a guy to come in and say, no, this is how NHL teams do stuff. And that's what Lou is. And you might think he's antiquated or old, but he knows how NHL teams do stuff. And he's not going to skimp on the dollar amount. He's not going to like, you know, go on a skeleton crew just because he feels like it. He's going to fill out the team the way he has seen it be run, both, you know, in a modest sort of, you know, mid-tier or small market team like New Jersey or with the biggest market team in the world in Toronto Maple Leafs. And, you know, he knows that these, you know, you got to have to pay people to do stuff. And I think that goes back, you know, management and ownership too has to be willing to like foot the bill and like sign a check and be like, all right, well, you want to hire this guy who is the business manager for the Penguins and help get their arena built? Okay, let's bring him in. And there he is. And he's going to oversee the building of Belmont Park. And I'm sure once Belmont is under construction and, you know, more of the sort of business operations filter out towards the Islanders from the Barclays people, you're going to see even more hires being made. And again, Lou can do that because Lou's Lou and everybody knows Lou and Lou knows everybody. So, you know, I think we're all kind of concerned. I don't want to talk too much about the trade deadline because we're a little bit far away. Carey has an article about how the Islanders should approach the trade deadline, and it's really good. It's a little too early for me to talk about that yet. I don't want to get there. But, you know, I think people are concerned that, you know, he might make a misstep or something like that. But it's been so far, it goes without saying what you said. it goes without saying what you just said. Barry Trotz isn't here without Lou Lamoriello. If Garth Snow was on the other line saying, hey, Barry, why don't you come? You want to come coach the Islanders? I don't think Barry Trotz is here. And that's not a slight to Garth Snow. I just don't think Barry Trotz is into it. But if it's Lou and, you know, ownership is ready to foot the bill for stuff, I think Barry thinks about it. And here he is. And he's having a good time right now. With that said, the Edmonton Oilers have disappointed 30 NHL fan bases by firing their general manager, Peter Chiarelli, a man who I think could potentially be considered the third, maybe second best general manager in Islanders history, considering his trading history with the Islanders, having given them the likes of Matthew Barzal, Anthony Beauvillier, Jordan Eberle, Johnny Boychuk. Remember him? Yeah, he came from Peter Chiarelli too. Tim Thomas, remember that one? Remember when the Islanders
that was awesome.
The greatest cat mule of all time. He took Brian Rollison off of Garth Snow's hands for some reason. I have absolutely no idea. Chiarelli was fired. The news came out at about 2 o'clock this morning, and we all kind of woke up and were like, oh, they fired Chiarelli. But apparently the decision, he actually was fired during the second period of the Oilers-Red Wings game on Tuesday night. And that is cold. Like, they fired him during the game so that he can leave sort of under the cover of darkness. And when the Oilers promptly went on to lose the game 3-2 to the team that was in last place in the NHL. And so when it came out that he was fired, that was it. The best part of all this, unfortunately, now everybody's going to lose the guy who might potentially trade you a Taylor Hall for an Adam Larson. The best part of this is seeing all of these Edmonton media guys who have been telling us for 4 years about what a genius Peter Chiarelli is and how he's playing, you know, five-dimensional chess while everybody else is playing checkers, now be like, these moves were too bad and he had too many blemishes on his record and now he's fired. It's like, what? You guys weren't even talking. You were talking about how this team was following the game plan, and all of a sudden you're like, man, well, too bad, man. Now you're out. It's fascinating.
It's so good. And the Koskinen thing is awesome too.
Oh, yeah. Oh, geez, I totally forgot. Thanks. Yeah. Just his last act as a general manager was signing former Islanders draft pick Mikko Koskinen to a 3-year contract that's going to pay him $4.5 million next year. Mikko Koskinen has 30 games in the NHL under his belt. He has been regressing ever since a very good first month of the season, and now the Oilers are stuck with him. Oh, and they also gave him a partial no movement clause, or a limited no trade clause, because if you're going to pay a guy $4.5 million a year for 3 years based on 30 games, why not give him a no trade clause too? Like, that's why you get fired when you're there.
Yeah. And then the report came out that the contract was basically like solely negotiated between Chiarelli and Koskinen's camp, which is great. So I think he might have saw the writing on the wall. He's like, you know what? I'm going to screw them a little bit.
Well, there was one report that was like, well, this was a team decision. And the other one like, well, no, it was a Chiarelli thing. And this gets back to exactly what I was saying. And look, I'm not trying to laugh at a guy losing his job, but I am going to laugh because he had Connor McDavid. And, you know, the Islanders took tons and tons of shit, deservedly so, for having John Tavares, not really doing a whole heck of a lot with him outside of the one playoff series they won. Again, deservedly so. They deserve all the blame in the world for not building a team around a guy who you could build a team around. The Oilers have been much worse without, you know, for Connor McDavid than the Islanders were for John Tavares. And there's no end in sight. They're still stuck with Lucic. Now they're stuck with Koskinen. There's a lot of guys on the books for that team that are going to take up a lot of money for a long time. They don't have Taylor Hall. They don't have Jordan Eberle. They're going to trade Cam Talbot, who was the savior like 2 seasons ago, and now he's not. But this, you know, this, the thing about the Oilers is they don't have what Lou Lamoriello was talking about, which is a person to tell somebody, in this case, probably owner Darrell Cates, that this is a bad idea. You might not want to hear this, but this is a bad idea. Signing Milan Lucic to this contract is a bad idea. Like, if somebody told him that, he wouldn't be stuck there right now, and maybe they'd be better off. Trading Taylor Hall is a bad idea, but nobody told him that. So, here you go. It's been – there's a lot of schadenfreude out there about this. And, you know, now the articles are starting to come out. Oh, my God, we've got to save Connor McDavid from the Oilers. Yeah, okay. Yeah, sure. That's going to happen, I'm sure.
I mean, it's so fun to not – to be where we are in the position we're in and to see – that stuff happen and not have to worry about, you know, well, you know, I can't really enjoy this because the Islanders are doing, you know, the same thing. And it's nice to be able to look at that and be like, yeah, that's not, you know, that's not how, you know, put your nose up at it and be like, that's not how an NHL team's supposed to look. Yeah. I'll show you how an NHL team's supposed to look. Hmm. We're all on the same page here. Like our star players seem so happy. I mean, that's another thing that I actually wanted to mention about the Lamoriello thing was the way you talked about Matt Barzal. And sure, like there's been lip service done about players like that in the past, but the way he talks about him, you're just like, yeah, that's how I feel about Matt Barzal too. He seems to like be just such like a good professional hockey player, and professional being the key word. And Lou sees that, because I think Lou would be the type of guy that if Barzal wasn't up to task, he'd be basically, you know, sent down or something stupid would happen where the whole hockey world would be making fun of us again, not like we're doing with the Oilers right now. And yeah, it's just nice to be in this position and to be able to join in on the fun for once.
Yeah, but yeah, no, Lou, yeah, talked about how he didn't really know Matt Barzal personally before, but now he knows what a competitor he is and how he wants to be that good, and he wants to be, you know, he wants to be an all-star, perennial all-star, and be that guy who you know, is the best, one of the best in the league. And that's the kind of people you want. But he's also, you know, he's not cocky. He's confident, but he's humble, that all that kind of stuff. I believe it was on the Athletic podcast with Pierre LeBrun and Scott Burnside. I believe, it might have been wrong, but Arthur Staple was on it. And I believe he said that, you know, Barzal has had a great time under Lamoriello. Like Lou loves to tell stories, and apparently Barzal is a rapt listener. Like he likes to hear these stories, and he wants to be part of the conversation, and he wants to be again in the place where the best players in the league are going to be. And ironically enough, one of those places is in San Jose this weekend for the NHL All-Star Game. We talked about it last week. I think Barzal has as good a chance as any to win the MVP. I would love to see him do it. I think it would be an awesome, you know, kind of thing. Everybody's going to be off on vacation this week because they have to be. Barry Trotz said he is going to go visit his parents in balmy Dolphin, Manitoba, which was like minus 35. He said, yeah, I don't know if he was kidding or serious, but I could believe it either way. But I think that would be an awesome bump for the Islanders to be like, holy cow, our guys, we're on vacation and our guys out there winning All-Star Game MVP. And I think they would really feed off that coming back after the All-Star break, because they got a tough schedule coming up in February. Back-to-back games against the Lightning and Kings to start things off. And then it's, was it 14 games in 28 days in February? That's just brutal.
Yeah. And I know they have like this 8-game break right now, but the Islanders, another startlingly good thing that they did was they got through this hellish stretch in January. I think they played like 10 and 21 or some crazy amount of games. Brendan Burke was talking about it. I was like, and they came out of that. And Butch Goring actually made a very salient point. He's, you know, that's the stretch of the season where, you know, you're looking at the schedule early on. And you're like, by this time, we'll know whether this team is, you know, for real or not. And that stretch is bearish. It's just going to tell you where you're at the end. You're going to go into it. You're going to hold your breath and you're going to come out of it. You're either going to be in a playoff spot, you'll be fighting for a playoff spot, or you're going to be at the bottom of the barrel and being ready to call it a season. And the Islanders got out of that stretch in like probably, I think, you know, basically every NHL team had that a similar number. They probably took, maybe besides the Flames, had the best record in in that stretch.
They had the most points, right? They won 15 of 18, wasn't it? They had 22 points in that stretch. Yeah.
It's insane. So I'm, you know, as daunting a task as it will continue to be, we seem to have already got through one significant checkpoint. So I'm not too worried.
the teams in February represent the real challenge. Again, they got another game against the Lightning. I'm gonna go out on a limb and say it's probably not gonna end 5-1 Islanders, but hey, you never know. Maybe it will. Then again, they have a back to back the next night against the Kings, who, you know, aren't as good as they used to be, but still could put you away. And then again, they got to go out west. They got to play the Flames, who have been very good. They got to play them twice, actually. They got another game against Columbus, who's always giving the Islanders fits. They have a game against the Bruins, who again are very good. The Devils, who are probably kind of tired of getting kicked around a little bit. So it's going to be tough, but you know what? We've had a great show and we've talked for an hour and 10 minutes, and I don't want to get into that. That stuff. We'll talk about that next week, kind of coming out of the break, and you know, the things to worry about. As much as great as it is that the Islanders are in first place, and it seems like they'll be in first place by those 3 points, because right now it's 5-2 Leafs with a couple minutes to go in the third. Unfortunately, we have to say thank you, Leafs. But this will tie the Islanders, which is just as good as the Islanders being ahead of them anyway. Let's be honest. Just the fact that the Leafs have to see the Islanders there is a victory in and of itself. That we're all kind of tied, and so that's good. Nobody thought we'd be there too. So
yeah, I think this is like I said a couple weeks ago after they beat the Leafs, but there is nothing that is going to scare Leafs fans more than the fact that if the Canadians catch them and the Bruins catch them, there's a, you know, there's still an outside chance that the Islanders and Leafs meet in the playoffs. And God, I think we'll obviously all be very, very afraid here, but I don't think it'll pale in comparison to what, you know, James Myrtle and Steve Dangle are feeling up there, because they're the ones that were supposed to come into the season and be there. Well, the Islanders are going to be playing with house money. So
you just took the words right out of my mouth. I was going to say the difference in there is one team's playing with house money and the other one isn't. So yeah, I totally see what you're saying.
Yeah, so I mean, it's just like another kind of added perk is, and let's be honest, like, I don't think that's the ideal matchup for the Islanders in the first round of the playoffs, but it's just like another feather in the cap that, like, they are putting that much more anxiety into this fan base and that media monster up there and into the player that spurned them. So you can't tell me that guy hasn't thought about that, because he has.
Apparently there was an article on NBCSports.com today about Tavares's roller coaster ride, and I clicked on it and I was gonna read it, and I'm like, I don't want to hear this. I don't care. I'm gonna pay attention to my team, see where my team's at, and enjoy it, and again, and soak it in, because it's been a lot of fun.
Soaking it, baby.
So we'll talk about more about the schedule. We'll talk about the All-Star game, obviously, next week, and get into all that worrisome stuff. So I got a bunch of stuff to plug before we get out of here. As always, sneakyathletic.com. Go there. Use anxiety in the discount code box. You save 10%.
They got these nice goat hats with the Matthew Barzal.
Yes.
Like, they're orange and blue. So for All-Star weekend.
Yeah. No, get the goat, because he is the goat. And I think this weekend he'll be the goat in the game, because I think he's going to have a great game. But yeah, they got the Fort Never Lose. They got the GOAT stuff. 10%. You can save it. Anxiety. Put it in the discount code box. That is sneakyathletic.com. Do that. You also have a week of no games, so you have extra time. Go to iTunes. Go to SoundCloud. Go anywhere. Leave us a review. We really appreciate it. If you could, 5 stars, obviously. You don't have to write anything if you don't want to, but if you can leave us a review and gives us a little bit more visibility, it actually works out pretty well. I saw you were talking to somebody about getting on Google Play. That I can do. Truth be told, I have another podcast, Golden Girl Sports, and I had that on Google Play, and I think I thought I put this one on Google Play too. So I guess not. So I'll work on that. We'll get that there if anybody listens on Google Play. It's not hard. I forget how I did it, but I'm sure it's not difficult. So we can do that too. So thanks for bringing that up, because I had totally forgot.
And now that I guess we're at the halfway mark, I do want to say thank you. Like, the feedback has been really good to the show. And I know you and I were a little nervous about doing it once a week, and the Islanders being good has definitely helped. But like, it's really great to like hear people say, you know, reach out on Twitter and stuff about the show, because we really like, I love doing it. I love talking about the Islanders. So, this is great.
It is as enjoyable for us, if not more enjoyable, quite frankly, for us than it is for you guys. So yes, thank you very much for all of your feedback and all of your support and comments and the clicks and the listens and the downloads. We appreciate all of it. We see all of it. We appreciate all of it. And we wouldn't be here without you guys. It would just be Mike and I talking over Skype.
Yeah.
Which would be fun, but you know, it's kind of cool that we can record it and people listen to it. Okay. Speaking of Islanders podcasts, our Lighthouse Hockey Islanders podcast brethren, Noel and Dan, are having a live Isles Buzz episode on March 16th at the Great Offside Tavern after the game against the Red Wings. So get down there if you can. Again, that's March 16th, live Isles Buzz. You're going to go there, watch a game against the Red Wings, go to the offside. You know it from the commercials. Take a look and then stay for Nolan Dan's show. Should be great. You never know who you're going to see down there. We'll see what we can do. But yeah, you should definitely check that out. We'll plug that a few more times as well. Also, more Lighthouse Hockey brethren, John and Travis, otherwise known as Spiz Wolf and NDRE, have a new website. It is called NHLnames.com. You can go there. You can hear local play-by-play announcers correctly pronounce the names of players on every NHL team. This is a great site. It is meant for broadcasters, but if you know any hockey fans of other teams, if you know any other NHL broadcasters or journalists or writers or whatever, make sure they know, kick that traffic up, make sure people see it. Please don't, you know, send Brendan Burke 3,000 notifications about it, because I'm sure he's seen it. But anybody else, it could be helpful for them. And it's a great site. And I had never thought of anything like this, but seeing the work they put into it, it's just great. And it's just clean.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
Yeah.
But he DM'd me. He's like, hey, I'm going to launch a site, you know, check it out and retweet it. And I was like, absolutely. And there was no context. I had no idea what it was going to be. It was, and so when it was that, I laughed a little bit. I was like, this is great.
Yeah.
And I just started clicking around at a bunch of names. So I was like, this is a lot of fun.
I went to the Chicago one and I clicked on Henry Yokihara, because I had never heard of this person before, and that's how you say it. So it's NHLnames.com. Check it out. I mean, I'm sure it's going to be updated. Travis and John did a great job, and they deserve our support. So let's support them. What else? That's it. Read Lighthouse Hockey every single day for your most up-to-date Islanders news and discussion. Thank you for all for doing that. And you should follow Mike on Twitter at his Twitter account. What is it again?
It's the Big Lebowski with two E's.
The Big Lebowski.
We're all Islanders.
And we are all Islanders. Barry Trotz said we're all Islanders. You should follow Mike at the Big Lebowski because we are all Islanders, and it's great. But we're all Islanders, and you know what? We deserve a couple of days off because we need to soak in this first place standing right now. So thank you very much for listening. We will be back next week. We appreciate you hanging out with us. Thank you so much. Oh, and congrats to listener Dave and his wife on the birth of their son, Henrik. He told the story in the comments of last week's episode. Glad everybody's doing well. It's a great story. Check it out. And mazel tov. We will talk to you on the other side of the All-Star game. Good luck to young Matt Barzell, and we'll see you then. All right, bye-bye.